Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Sports Edge with Rick Wolf on your flagship station for New York sports. The Fan, Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM, WFAN New York.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Rick Wolf's Sports Edge. I'm your host, Rick Wolf. Well, on this morning's show, I do want to talk a bit about that disturbing incident this past week in a college baseball game in Texas where a player hit a home run, and as he was rounding third base, the pitcher who gave up the gopher ball literally charged off the mound at the batter and blindsided him. It was very, very odd and, of course, very, very dangerous. And, of course, I want to continue our conversation this morning about what we need to do now to stop crazy parents from physically or verbally assaulting and attacking our refs and umpires. It's all leading to a very serious issue in terms of finding enough officials to work our kids' games. But that's later on in the hour. First up, something a little different. Now, look, we all know that only a very, very small percentage of all aspiring young athletes ever are good enough to sign a pro contract and to make a career as a professional athlete. The problem is, lots and lots of youngsters would love to find a way to stay involved in sports in some way in terms of their careers, perhaps as a, I don't know, on-air commentator, or in some sports-related business once their own playing days come to an end. But the question is, how does one do that? Look, we know there are some colleges and graduate programs in sports management or sports media out there, but even if one finishes and gets their degree, it's still very much an uphill challenge to find one's way into a very competitive field. A field that pays very, very little at the start, although we all know that those at the very top can make serious big-time salaries. So to that end, I am eager to welcome my guest this morning to talk about life in sports with a real focus on those youngsters and kids who want to find a way to stay close to sports in any kind of endeavor in terms of business. And that's a huge territory, we know. But the fact is, people who want to stay close to sports are eager to find a way into the so-called jungle of how do I get in and how do I proceed. Now, Larry Berger is senior producer with USA Today Sports, and in his work, he routinely interviews top athletes. He's held this position at USA Today for close to a decade. Before joining them, he was at MSG Varsity. Before that, he worked for the NBA. In other words, Larry Berger has learned firsthand how to enter and then scale the world of sports video, and he's been most successful. But the truth is, and we'll hear in a second, there was a time not that long ago when Larry was a college undergrad who loved sports and was also trying to carve a career in sports for himself after graduation. Here's the bottom line. If you have a high school or college student at home who is eager to find a way into sports after school, well, this is somebody you want to listen to. And on that note, Larry, good morning.
Rick, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate the time.
Well, Larry, this is a most provocative topic. And look, everybody loves sports, wants to find a way to stay in it. And the fact of the matter is, it is sort of uncharted territory. That's, I guess, the best way to put it. Now, let's start at the beginning. You went to college at the University of Albany, and you decided that you wanted to have a career in sports. And like, you know, so many talented college students, you did a lot of broadcasting of sports in college, and I'm sure you were told you were a rising star and that the world of sports was ready for you, correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I did go to the University at Albany. I was the sports director of the college radio station. I did a bunch of great internships at Channel 9, WWOR-TV, and MSG Network. Came out of school with, you know, a head of steam. I'm going to take the sports world by storm. I had this tremendous resume. Bam! And then reality hit. I remember my first interview with Don Sperling, a tremendous figure in the industry. And he was the executive producer of NBA Entertainment. He's now with the New York Giants. And I'm rattling off my resume. I was the sports director of the college radio station. I interviewed this athlete and that athlete and interned here and there. And he looked at me. He goes, "Wow, Larry, that's impressive. So basically you can run this office. You can run the NBA's video production." And that was my welcome to the quote-unquote real world. And it was, I ended up getting the job because I was able to recite three of the five starters for the Sacramento Kings. Although he said I needed to name all five, I got three. But that was my welcome to the sports industry moment. And it was after that I realized just how competitive it is to get into this industry and how you really need to have a plan.
Well, I mean, I can look back when I was finishing college, and I'm much older than you are, but the truth was back then careers in sports weren't very plentiful, and in truth they didn't pay very much, even the positions at the very top. But of course now times have changed. But again, most people decide, okay, I want to find my way into this industry. How do I get an internship? Are internships even available? Again, you were in your early 20s coming out of college. How did you find internships? How did you find a way to sort of distinguish yourself from all the other applicants who were eager to somehow break in?
Rick, I think you bring up a good point. How do you distinguish yourself? The odds are not in your favor. Let's say there's 1, 2, 3 internships available at a specific company that you're interested in working in. The odds are that the decision makers have a relative, have a friend, have a neighbor that is interested in that role. Mm-hmm. And those roles usually go to them. But again, I think you have to have a plan. And that plan starts out in high school. You know, let's just use sports video production as media mm-hmm. as an example. Covering your high school team, covering the human interest stories, creating content on the human interest stories, interviewing the athletes, the coaches, and creating the content, that's exactly what we do in the industry as professionals. The only thing that differentiates the two is reps. And as early as you can start creating content with your high school athletes, the better it is. Cover the high school like the pros. Job shadow. Ask for job shadowing opportunities. Everybody in this industry got a break, and most everyone looks to give a break as well. There's some great people in the industry. Ian Eagle, Spiro Ditas, two guys who started out their illustrious careers at WFAN. Wonderful people. I remember interviewing your dad, and he was a wonderful person, a tremendous career he had in broadcasting. Reaching out to alums, reaching out to your parents, friends. There's so many different ways to go about it, but anything you can do to gain an edge, to become likable, to have the decision makers become emotionally vested in your success, that's, I think, the best way of trying to secure that internship.
We're talking with Larry Berger, senior producer with USA Today Sports, and we're talking about how do you break into this industry. And you mentioned that, you know, some of the sportscasters you've met over the years, and you used the term likability. And I think, I got to tell you, everybody in this industry, people like Mike Breen, Kenny Albert, Jim Nantz, Ian Eagle, I mean, going on. They're all very likable people. Sean McCullough, these people are all, people that they have a smile on their face. They want to get to know you. It's extraordinary. As you said, Larry, these people go out of their way to be friendly. And that seems to be a common denominator for all these people. As I said, whether it's, a Breen or Kenny Albert or Sean McDonough or all the rest, they're just amazing people.
Without a doubt, and I think that's also how you break into the industry. Likeability is so important. If I'm going to hire somebody, I'm going to be around that person likely more hours than I am with my family. Am I going to enjoy that experience? You know, I mean, I think that's really the question. And the bottom line is, you can't be, you know, so amazingly superior to the rest of the crew, you know, at the age of 22. You know, most everybody's has roughly the same skill set, but I think likability is vitally important. And also, as a job seeker, you have to answer the question, a couple of questions. First of all, how am I going to drive revenue? This is a business. So no matter what you are, what role you play, you're affecting the bottom line. So how are you going to drive revenue, and how am I going to make my boss look good? I think those are two key messages that you always have to keep in mind when you're looking to get a job and when you're in the initial stages of your career.
This is really good advice. And you know, I do want to mention this because you said a few minutes ago, Larry, that you have to really have a plan. You have to figure out a way to market yourself. And I think a lot of youngsters who are full of ambition and energy, but they don't really sit down and look upon this as just what it is, a business, and you have to have a plan to find a way because, quite frankly, it is a super, not just, I mean, look, getting into business in any field is competitive, but in the sports world, it's extraordinarily competitive. And quite frankly, dealing with being turned down, rejection, sending out emails, never hearing back, this is something that is part and parcel of the whole experience. So you really have to learn about having a very, very thick skin early on. And you have to be mentally prepared for all that rejection, because that's what happens to everybody.
That's an unbelievably great point, Rick. The closing percentage on getting that entry level job, or getting the internship, the closing rate is really low. So it's about quantity. It's about going after it numerous times, and you will fail. You will fail often, and you have to go in understanding that and not suppressing the emotions of failure, because nobody likes to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And in failing, one time, five times, 10 times, 20 times, it may not affect you. But when you get to 75, 100, you know, it does affect you, because we're all human. And the bottom line is that it should affect you. And you can't suppress it. You have to understand your feelings and understand your emotions. But that should also drive you to figure out how to be creative and how to supply yourself with an edge. Rick, I'll tell you a quick story. I followed the Jets for a long period of time, and I have a 6-year-old son, and we were coming out of the game a few years ago, and we ran into the then general manager, Mike Maccagnan.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him to take a picture with my son, and you know, he was gracious to do that, and I took the picture, and I printed out the picture, and I mailed it to Mike Maccagnan, explaining, you know, my background in the industry and introducing my son, and he's only five years old, and he's really into sports, and he follows the Jets. And the purpose was to open the dialogue that maybe, you know, in a couple of years, my son could interview him for a book report or bring him to Show and Share or something along those lines, but really create a relationship where he becomes emotionally vested in my son's success. And I had no visions of grandeur that this is going to materialize in an internship when my son turns 19 or 20 and then a full-time job. The reason I bring up the story is that it's a strategy. I think it's the right mindset to think along those lines, because the vast majority of people look to enhance their resume and send out resumes and that sort of thing, which may not be successful. I feel like this industry is a very relationship-driven industry, and any way you can create a relationship, I think it's super beneficial.
I mean, I'm listening to this intently because, yes, it is a super competitive field, and you're talking about finding a way to build relationships, which goes back to being creative. to find an edge, to find some way to distinguish your resume from all the other literally hundreds or thousands of resumes from people who want to follow in the same way. This is really, really very, very solid advice. And by the way, friends, we'll take some calls for Larry Berger at 877-337-6666. Let me take a time out, though, first, Larry, because I do. When we come back from the break, I want to ask you about, well, quite frankly, there are new sort of venues in terms of sports and the media these days, including, you know, social media and influencers and things like that. And obviously that's opened up theoretically more possibilities to get into this industry. Okay, let me take a time out. When we return, I'll continue our conversation with Larry Berger. Stay with me. Talking this morning with Larry Berger, senior producer of USA Today Sports, about how to break into the sports world as in terms of one's career. And we're taking your calls at 877-337-6666. This is a fascinating conversation. Larry, my dad, who, well, he started his sportscasting career when he was in college, and he sportscasted well into his 90s. I mean, he used to tell me all the time that 50% was getting the job, 30% was keeping the job, and 20% was doing it. And you know, he just loved sportscasting and did it, you know, for, you know, a long, long time. But, you know, he would caution me. He said, look, Rick, you know, for every job I land as a sportscaster, there were literally dozens I didn't get because other people got them, or, you know, just a very, very difficult way to go about one's career. Now, I say that because we mentioned early on about the fact that it's you have to have a thick skin. And understand has nothing to do with, your talent. Has more to do with how you present yourself in terms of distinguishing yourself, finding a different angle, finding a way to build a relationship with these people who do the hiring. It's just a different kind of gambit in terms of finding a way up the ladder. But these days, I mentioned before the break, you know, there are all sorts of new ways of sports media in terms of social media and influencing and so on and so forth. Are you finding that's to be a way, that other ways to sort of skin this cat, that people can find a way into sports casting or the sports world?
Without a doubt. And first of all, I think your dad's percentages were spot on. I think that's a tremendous quote to live by. I think those numbers are very accurate. Yes, I think social media has provided a great platform to show the world your skill set. And I think especially when it comes to new sports, new niches, and I think that, you know, I'll use two examples, video games and betting. The world was looking for, the sports media world was looking for experts in those industries, betting, video games. And, you know, there was almost like a frenzy to find betting experts. And if you can, at a young age, via social media, find a unique niche and be the source for it, it's a tremendous opportunity. So there's quite a few professional broadcasters, both in the social space and with the networks, that talk about the NFL, that talk about Kyrie, should the Yankees sign Judge, should they sit Joey Gallo. There's a ton of them. The way I think to really break in and to be able to show your skill set is to find that niche and utilize social media to its fullest, you know, be it MLS or the other examples that I mentioned.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think that's key. And then after you do the content, we're all marketers. You have to show the world what you just did. I read an article recently about lawyers that are lawyers by trade, that they own their own practice, and they feel they're not doing anything with law anymore. It's about billing, it's about marketing, and that's accurate. So I think sports media, and if we're talking about social media in particular, is about creating great content, but then displaying it for everybody to see on Facebook and eventually on LinkedIn, and understanding the art of the humble brag.
Well,
which
no.
is, yes, I'm sorry, Rick, go ahead.
Before I forget, before I get to a couple of calls, I do want to make sure people, I'm sure, are listening to your advice with rapt attention. How can parents or students, how can they find you? What's the best way to get you, to track you down, Larry?
The best ways are on Facebook and LinkedIn and just search Larry Berger. And I will read everything and respond to everything, and I would love to hear from your listeners.
Wow, that's okay. That's quite an invitation, because a lot of people, as you well know, want to know what the secret is to get into this field. Let me take some calls. Let me go to Rob Fried because first of all, Rob, good morning. I know you had a great run up in the Boston Marathon. I'm excited for that. But yeah, I know you have some thoughts about sports, the sports world, and sportscasting as well.
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, thank you so much. I was trying to reach you last week. I was actually out at the Citgo sign off of Fenway and trying to reach you. I torn across a little bit, my prep run before I get out there. And it was my 10th one, and it was a great day, and I qualified again for next year. And thank you so much. I heard you made a little shout-out for me. And
of course.
Just a great event. I mean, to be part of an elite. And what event can you run with professional athletes at 61 years old? I mean, I'm out there running with kids and beating kids, and it was just an amazing, always a great experience to be part of that. But, you know, Mr. Berger, I'm listening because I went to school, how long it is, with John Heyman, the great baseball guy. We were high school classmates, and he was the editor. Now, back in the day, back in the, I guess in the 70s when I was in high school, there was nothing like this. So he wanted to, you know, get into this sports type of environment, and he was writing for high school paper, and he followed his dreams. And Marty Glickman, and you know, Rick, I spoke with your dad numerous times. Not that I was going to go into this business, because back then my dream was to, you know, go into another form of sports business. I went for phys ed in college, because that's really, my dad was in that direction, and there was really nothing like this, unless I wanted to write for a paper or maybe get on, on television and stuff like that. And it was so different. But I think when I'm listening to all this, it's something that the young people of today, I know they have camps, Mr. Berg. I know at Hofstra they have some camps that the young kids could go to and take these courses. But I think what you're bringing up here, I think kids should think also another direction. Because it is so competitive, and I hate to knock your thoughts down here, they should go for something in education. Whatever they choose to do in their college, know that, you know, they have a plan to do something else if they can't get into this. And I know you're trying to promote people to get into your field. I think the most important thing is in education, pick something you like. And if it is this type of a field, then go for it and, you know, do your best to get in the door, and that's, I think, what you're trying to promote here. But I think it's fascinating to me listening to this story here.
Well, that's a good point, and you know, Rob, thank you as always for the call. Larry, what about that? Do you advocate that kids, obviously have great plans and great hopes and ambitions, but they obviously need to pay their bills? Should they have a backup plan that they should, do something else as a day job while they're pursuing their dreams in sports?
Without a doubt, 100%. And even if you do get that entry-level job in the sports industry, you still have to advance your knowledge. And after a few years, many people in the industry look to get a graduate degree in business or law.
Yep.
So without a doubt, once you're in the industry, continue your education. But I think Rob brought up an outstanding point. The supply and demand, the numbers don't equate. Not everybody gets a trophy.
Mm-hmm.
And the key is to have a plan B, without a doubt, and whatever it is. But, you know, a lot of people's passion is the sports industry. It was my passion. It's your passion. So many people's passion. I say go for that, but definitely figure out something else if it doesn't come to fruition.
Yeah, as I said, because it's such we can't emphasize this enough. It is, look, it is, no matter how you slice and dice this, being involved in sports. Sports is part of the entertainment industry. It's all sorts of various nooks and crannies as to find your way in. And once you get in, you keep finding ways to build relationships and finding ways to distinguish yourself in terms of finding, why. I mean, and Larry, you and I have discussed this over, in our conversations. A lot of people say, I'll do anything to get a job in sports. But the problem is, the people who are looking, doing the hiring in sports, they're saying, I don't want somebody who'll do anything. I happen to need somebody who has a background in finance, or I need somebody who has a background in sales, or whatever it might be. They're looking for specific talents that might be something that you do well. Just to be sort of a generalist isn't always the best way to get in the front door.
Rick, such a great point that you bring up. The "I'll do anything" phrase in sports is the kiss of death. I've spoken with HR leaders. If an applicant or they receive an email that says, "I'll do anything in sports, I know sports," that's an automatic disqualification from a position. The bottom line is they're not there to fulfill your sports fantasies. They're there to run a business and to drive a business. So whatever you do, be it sales, public relations, marketing, whatever it is, you need to drive their business and understand they're not there to make your dreams come true. And it's funny, you know, I've asked some titans of the sports industry whether they consider themselves, you know, CEOs, presidents, marketing leaders, or are they in the sports field? And they consider themselves more marketers and leaders who happen to be in the sports field. They're not in the sports industry per se. That's not the headline. The headline is they're leaders in what they bring to the table. And I think that's a really important distinction.
Yeah.
And for your listeners out there, they should avoid, "I'm a big sports fan and I'll do anything to get into the industry." Those are key phrases to avoid.
This is just such valuable advice. And friends, again, Larry Berger, a senior producer at USA Today Sports, you can find him on Facebook and LinkedIn. It's Larry Berger, B-E-R-G-E-R, and he just has tremendous, tremendous insights into how do you get into the sports industry. It's just fascinating. All right, Larry, I think there's some other topics here, but I thank you so much for your time this morning, for joining in, and just as I said, providing some just invaluable counsel to parents who have kids who want to go into this area. Simple as that.
Rick, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. You have a wonderful show. I listen to it almost every week, and I can't thank you enough for the opportunity.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for the kind words, Larry. And I'll be here. I'll be interested to see what kind of response you get from people on Facebook and LinkedIn. This is good stuff. So, okay, moving on. Did you happen to see the video that went viral of the college pitcher down in Texas who gave up a go-ahead home run late in the game and then blindsided the hitter as the hitter was rounding third base? I mean, this is something I want to talk to you about, because incidents like these, coupled with the ongoing concern of parents being out of control at our kids' games, they continue to worry me that something is really out of whack. Something's out of balance at our youth and amateur sporting events. Now, we talked about this on the week last week on the show a little bit, and in truth, we're still looking for solutions. There's just something in the air that is not good, something where people are not thinking ahead or thinking about the impact of their actions, whatever they do things. There's no accountability. There's no sense of responsibility. And we have to find a solution here. 877-337-6666. You know, ironically, there was an article on this very topic that ran this past week in the New York Times, and it pointed out, which we all know, that the declining number of refs is out there all over the country, and it can be attributed to attacks by parents. But as good as the article was, it didn't prevent any solutions. Now, look, I really want to get into this, because I do think we have to really figure out a way. And I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but to me, it's really up to the school districts and to the school administrators to crack down on those parents who just can't control themselves. And we already know that school administrators are already under siege from crazy parents. But we really need to do something. And I have some pretty strong suggestions here, which I'll get to after we come back from this break. And I want to hear from you as well. Again, 877-337-6666. Stay with me. Back with more after this. I was preparing my notes yesterday afternoon. I had the Yankees game on television and watching them play the Cleveland Guardians. Remember the legendary voice of the Yankees, Bob Shepard? And he used to say right before every game, over the PA, that spectators are warned not to interfere with any play on the field. If they do, they will be immediately escorted out of the stadium and will be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. Now, I may be paraphrasing here, but it was the voice of God at Yankee Stadium. And when you heard Bob Shepard, well, you took his warnings seriously. So I was thinking about this, watching the end of the Yankee-Cleveland game yesterday, and obviously the horrible display of the fans and the bleachers throwing all sorts of terrible objects, things out of bottles and cans, whatever they were throwing, at the Cleveland outfielders. And instead of the Yankees celebrating an amazing come-from-behind win, all of a sudden you're looking at people like Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton out there in the outfield like security force guards trying to calm the fans down. That was a very awkward, very embarrassing situation. And it's, again, there's something in the air about what's happening now. Maybe everybody was just so cooped up for a couple of years with COVID, and now they're coming out and they're just running, rampant to voice their feelings and not thinking ahead as to the impact of their actions or their comments or what they're saying. It's a combination of a sense of entitlement, which is wrong, or a sense of just not thinking ahead. And I want to get your thoughts about this at 877-337-6666, because it does have a tie-in to how we treat referees and umpires and officials. Let's go up to Greenwich, Connecticut. Ron is standing by. Ron, good morning. You're next up on the Fan.
Oh, thanks, Rick. Listen, you just brought up the point about the Yankee Stadium that I was going to bring up. I'm not going to go into my thoughts. Let somebody else. But I just wanted to make sure you were going to cover that. Thanks, Rick.
Oh, sure, Ron. Absolutely. Because something is going on here. There's something happening here that, I mean, that was really ugly yesterday. And there was no reason for it. I mean, the Yankees won the game. The Yankees didn't lose the game. They won the game. So this is how we're going to celebrate, by trying to go in the outfield and trying to calm down the fans who are angry because one of the Cleveland outfielders took exception to being heckled or being whatever, how he was sort of like annoyed by the fans out there. I mean, this is really weird. Let's go to Jack Jack Smithlin, because I want to hear Jack's thoughts on this as well. Because Jack, I know for years you've said on the show that this is all about accountability and people being held responsible for their actions. They got to think ahead, think twice before whatever they say, what they do.
You're absolutely right, Rick. But before I get into this topic, I just want to say something that
you know
Ani Ramos, and Ani Ramos, the great catching academy coach, mm-hmm. has a daughter. And getting back to your first topic with Larry, I watched this girl have a dream from when she was before she was in high school, and she never ever swayed from that dream, and she did everything in her power to get to where she is today. She networked very well. She used her force behind her, all of her loved ones, and she did exactly what she started at her high school newspaper, I believe, and now she's working for MLB in a full-time position. And I'm going to tell you something. If anybody ever wrote a book about how they did it, I think Alexa Ramos should write a book, because she was just, I watched her along the way, and she was just exactly. Nothing got in her way. If this didn't happen, she went on to the next one. So if Alexa's listening, and even Ani, you did a great job with Alexa. She's like a daughter to me. I love her. And she did it the right way. Great job, Alexa.
Well, and you mentioned about her. I mean, the fact is we've seen so many breakthroughs with women in sports over the last several years. Now, I mean, we have females as minor league managers, females who are general managers. I mean, it's extraordinary. It's not a question so much whether they have the talent. Of course they have the talent. The question is, how are they going to break through that traditional glass ceiling and just keep, pushing and persevering the way to getting that job? And, they're succeeding.
Nothing stopped this kid. I mean, the Yankees have a female hitting coach.
Yeah.
I mean, how great is that? I mean, how great is that, really? I mean, I wish she was with the Mets and not the Yankees, but, she's fabulous. And you know what? Lexa, I'm telling you, I hope you're listening. I know that you listen to Rick Wolf's show. You did it the right way, dear, and I'm so proud of you. Getting back to the craziness, I mean, listen, I had a thing that I used to do with my kids, think before you act. think before you speak, think about the consequences. But that back page of that, think about the consequences, isn't applying anymore, like you said. There are no consequences. A slap on the wrist, you get thrown out of the gym, and you're back the next game doing the same exact thing.
Yep.
You know, we have to start prosecuting some of these people. You know, you've hit it so many times on your show, Rick, so many times. You've been covering this. You know, COVID had a lot to do with it. I've seen changes in my own family because of COVID. And you know what? It's a tough time, and you got to work through it. But you know what? There's no sense in doing things that are going to be unlawful, that are going to create problems. I mean, watching, you know, I watched a little bit of the Yankee game with what happened. And, you know, stuff, what happened to those fans? Were they removed and sent home? Or were they processed? You know, they're physically throwing things out at players. That's breaking the law. And, you know, like Shepard said, you know, I think here's what we should do with the umpires today. First of all, one of their prerequisites for getting an umpire's license is to go take an martial arts program so that they can actually defend themselves. So, you know, because
I hear you, but they really shouldn't have to defend themselves because
that was kind of a joke.
But, I understand, but you know, and you and I are on the same page on this. I mean,
we have to
get to the point where we stop, as you said, this really sort of like slap on the wrist. Oh, you know, parents understand. I lost my cool. I'm so emotionally vested for my kid to do well. No. You have to understand, if you're an adult and you theoretically abide by the law, there is no excuse, there's no reason for you to get verbally or physically attack a referee or an umpire. It just has to stop. And the way I think we have to do this now is really have either security officers or high-level administrators from the school district or you know, police officers at these games. And basically, if a parent is out of control, they escort the parent and they arrest them. They arrest them, and you say, and not only are you getting arrested, but you also are now totally banned from going back to any more sporting events for the rest of the year. Well, it's not fair. I want to see my kid play. Yeah, but you sacrificed that privilege because you were out of control. We can't have situations, Jack, as you well know. I mean, you know, you can't have, if two teams are going to play and there's no umpires to show up, it's the worst thing in the world because the umpires don't want to run the risk of getting hurt. It's just crazy to me.
About the consequences, Rick, and this is something that I've lived through my whole life, coaching for as many years as I've coached.
Yeah.
Administrators at the high school level are afraid, deathly afraid, of lawsuits. They'd rather just reprimand and remove than to have somebody say, I have rights, but you know what? They don't have those rights. But it still can come down to a lawsuit. And I'm going to tell you, even athletic directors to this day, and I work for some good ones and some not so good ones, but they don't back their coaches when there's a problem, when a parent goes after a coach or something like that. They'd rather get rid of the coach or remove him or put him in another position than have to listen to or have to deal with a lawsuit from a parent because the coach was being unfair, wasn't playing their kid. And it's a fear that causes these administrators to back away from most problems. When you talk about the NIAC, that was terrible. I mean, there should be something done there, and I don't know what the follow-up's been there, but that was completely, you know, outrageous.
You're talking about the NIAC high school at basketball,
yes.
Boys basketball at Pearl
yes.
River High School, where, you know, the kids in the stands were making racist taunting when the black kids are shooting free throws for NIAC High School. Yeah, I should go back and follow to see what did take place, because from what I can tell, nothing happened. Pearl River said, well,
exactly.
You make too much of a big deal. That's something we do. It has nothing to do with race. I mean, that's not the right legacy or lesson you want to have out to your students. Jack, I tell you, it's a real concern, and until something is done, we're going to see continue the numbers to drop. The umpires and refs and officials numbers are going to drop, because who wants to take their life in their hands to go make a few extra bucks working a high school sporting event? Jack, let me take some more of the calls. Thanks as always for your thoughts. Appreciate it. Let me move on to Craig in Tappan. Hey, Craig. Good morning. You're next up on WFAN.
Hey, thank you, Rick. Just a quick shout out to Larry. He is on the high level likability, as I went to university at Albany with him, where I actually played baseball
Huh. Okay.
This crosses over into that segment, what went on in Texas at the junior college level, which kind of crosses over into people off the field and people on the field. And what I've witnessed is the lack of respect for the game, where athletes who are competing, and you need a high-level passion to play at a lower level as well as a high level, especially in the baseball world where you might have more people in the dugout than outside the dugout rooting. What I saw was just unacceptable, where the batter gets charged by a pitcher as he's rounding third.
Yep.
And that's, you know, just incorrigible. Well,
Let me just fill in because in case I have some listeners who didn't happen to see the video, and there's more detail now coming forth. First of all, this is with two junior colleges in near Fort Worth, North Central Texas College and Weatherford College. And as you said, it was a doubleheader late in the first game. Kid hit the home run to give North Central Texas the lead. Apparently, what happened is he was rounding second base. And you can't tell this from the video, but he did something or said something to taunt the pitcher, okay? And then as he rounded third, that's where the pitcher obviously just lost his mind and decided to blindside the guy. And he's, you know, thankfully, nobody got seriously hurt. The kid got up, who hit the home run, ambled to home, touched home plate. But again, afterwards now, we found out that the pitcher was kicked off the team. At Weatherford, the coach was unbelievably apologetic and embarrassed by this thing, but the hitter also was suspended by his team for his involvement for taunting the pitcher. So, to your point, Craig, there's something about respect for the game, and you know, you can't. We know emotions can run high in all sports, particularly in baseball, but there's a point where you just have to say, look, I got to suck this up and not give in to my impulses.
I'd like to add to that is that the pitcher is since signed as what the junior college level is for, to go at a higher level at the D1 University of Houston. So that'll unfold. So, but my point is that are we sometimes rewarding the bat flipping, the taunting, because the batter was warned earlier in that game for speaking verbally to another pitcher.
Oh, is
so
that right?
We're watching it. Okay. I actually did the little deep dive on the story, but it just adds to the point that sometimes the kids, the young men on the field, I like when they root for each other, and I see it at the youth level, where they get on other kids, and it's just not a respect. You see it at the high level with a bat flipped after a home run, and it's just not how the game, at least the way I think you might have been taught it and I was.
No, I hear you loud and clear. Thanks for the call, Craig. And I do think that's all part of this. And we know, look, Major League Baseball is doing whatever they can to try to polish their image, especially after the lockout, and they're trying to make the game more appealing to younger kids. And they feel that bat flips and other kind of what we would consider a generation ago less than sportsmanlike antics are now becoming more mainstream. But again, it's hard to draw a line or figure out what is right and what is unacceptable. I've talked on the show about this movement, Save the Game. I think that's heading in the right direction. A lot of people in baseball are coming to Save the Game as a way to get baseball to back to being the way you play the right way, in terms of obviously including sportsmanship between players. Simple as that. Well, friends, this has been a fascinating hour this morning talking with Larry Berger, talking about how to break into the sports world if you're not a pro athlete, and obviously getting your thoughts about what's happening in terms of, you know, parents and keeping them under a very, very short leash, because we can't have a situation because we're losing referees, umps, and officials all the time. The numbers are just beginning to go downhill, and we can't replace them. It's as simple as that. Something has to be done. Something has to be done to basically enforce what is good and appropriate adult behavior. Okay, that's going to do it for me in this edition of the Sports Edge. My thanks, as always, to Ed Arzuman. Please stick around for the Moose. He's up next. I'll see you next Sunday right here on The Fan.